So today we're reading from Adilila, chapter 14, verses 4 and 5. So the purport is with verse 5, so I'll just read verse 4. Is 5 on the board? Yes, 5 is on the board. I have already briefly spoken about the pastimes of his birth, this is Lord Chaitanya, in chronological order. Now I shall enumerate the codes of his childhood pastimes. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the childhood pastimes of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Lord Krishna himself. Although such pastimes appear exactly like those of an ordinary child, they should be understood as various pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, this statement is confirmed as follows. Avajananti ma mudha manushim tanum ashritam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appears on this planet or within this universe like an ordinary human being or human child to execute his pastimes, yet he maintains his superiority as the Supreme Lord. Lord Krishna appeared as a human child, but his uncommon activities, even in his childhood, like the killing of the demon Putana or lifting of Govardhan Hill, were not the engagements of an ordinary child. Similarly, although the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, as they will be described in this chapter, appear like activities of a small boy, they are uncommon pastimes, impossible for an ordinary human child to execute. Srila Prabhupada ki. So this is a nice lead up and introduction to the rest of the chapter. And it is our introduction to the wonderful pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his youth, or even before youth, you can say in his very early days. A lot of these pastimes are described in detail in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, which covers the very early childhood pastimes of Mahaprabhu in greater detail. But Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, in his humility, has explained that what he's doing in the CC is simply chewing the remnants of what Vrindavan Das Thakur has left behind in his Chaitanya Bhagavat, Chaitanya Mangal. And he is presenting those pastimes which haven't been covered in great detail. So that is a demonstration of his great humility. We get actually a very brief description of Lord Chaitanya's childhood pastimes in the CC also. Some of the major pastimes of philosophical importance are described. But then really, the majority of the CC, Chaitanya Charitamrita, focuses on the Lord's propagation of the Sankirtan movement, his activities after he takes initiation from Ishwarapuri, and the point at which his bhakti starts to manifest in a very visible way. And so that is really the focus of Chaitanya Charitamrita. But a very brief synopsis is given in this chapter. And these pastimes, just like all the activities of Krishna, are very mysterious. These pastimes, just like Lord Krishna's pastimes, if we read in the 10th canto in Krishna book, they give rise to different emotions amongst the different devotees who participate in them. They lead to great pleasure. The devotees experience great pleasure when they observe Krishna's pastimes. In some cases, they experience great anxiety, especially when they're in a role of trying to look after Krishna, and Krishna is behaving in a very naughty manner. Other times, persons who are against Krishna, they experience great fear and an end to their fear when Krishna finishes them off and liberates them. And others experience a whole range of emotions with loving reciprocation, familial relationships, relationships as a servant. And the Lord does this in his incarnations. So we in his appearance as Krishna himself, the original person, he exhibits all the different rasas in a very complete way. In his other incarnations, he doesn't always exhibit all the rasas fully, because he has certain jobs to perform, and he manifests his pastimes along certain strict lines. So, in this manifestation as Lord Chaitanya, who is the form of Krishna, Krishna Varanam Tusha Krishnam, he's Krishna himself, but he comes in a golden form. So somehow he also manifests some pastimes which have very strong correspondence with those of the 10th canto. And the rest of this chapter and the next few chapters cover these pastimes. But before we can get into those pastimes, this verse establishes the basis for us to be able to become qualified. And he explains that, let me first offer my respectful obeisances unto the childhood pastimes. And although these pastimes appear like those of an ordinary child, they should be understood as various pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Now this is a very good a piece of advice for us trying to enter into any of the Lord's pastimes, to enter into his philosophy, to try to understand what that philosophy means. We have to first understand who the Supreme Lord is. Without that, the pastimes can appear just like little snippets of entertainment, little pieces of amusing literature, perhaps poetic literature, perhaps literature that's above average. But we may not approach it necessarily in a way that brings us the ultimate benefit. So therefore, the writers of this great Shastra always start off and explain who we are dealing with here, who and what we are dealing with. I always find it a little helpful to think of analyzing who we are and who Krishna is, sometimes in terms of what rather than who. When we define what, we actually try to understand the constituent parts, the actual nature, the actual qualities. And so in the Gita, right from the beginning, we understand that what we are is not actually what we think we are. Our nature, in terms of composition and makeup, is actually spirit soul. That spirit soul has a personality. That spirit soul manifests personality. That is where the who comes in. But the what aspect is that we are spirit soul, and we are trapped in a material body. And that combination then walks around for a number of years, engages in different pastimes we call them, or activities. We cause trouble in so many ways. We enjoy happiness. We suffer distress. And then at the end of it, that whole package is separated into its constituent parts. The subtle body carries the soul off to its next destination. And in that new package of spirit soul, subtle body, and new gross material body, we engage in another series of pastimes. So this is explained in detail in the early parts of the Gita, chapter 2. And from that understanding, we understand who we are. Then we also understand from the Gita who Krishna is. Bahunam janmanamante jnanavan mam prapadyante vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurabha. This science is very, very rare and very difficult to understand. But one can understand it after taking many, many births of serious devotional practice. And what is the nature of Krishna? Well, Krishna's nature is that he has appeared on many, many occasions. He has appeared many times, just like Arjun. But the difference is that Krishna can remember every single one of his appearances, because his appearances are not ordinary. They are not the normal material production of a mother and a father. They are the Lord's own personal desire manifesting in a form just suitable for his pastimes, so that he can engage in loving reciprocation with his devotees. So this is what needs to be understood. And Prabhupada gives us a caution here that in the Gita in chapter 9 he mentions avajananti mam mudha manushim tanam ashritam. So when the Lord descends in human form, certainly when the Lord descends in other forms as well, there are those who ridicule him. But especially when he descends in human form, people have certain expectations of God. And when he acts in a very, very human way, which seems very trivial, very childish, even great personalities like Lord Brahma become confused. So Prabhupada explains, and the Gita explains, that fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. So this is exactly what happens when we don't understand step one of the process. If we haven't worked our way through the very basics of Krishna consciousness, we will read some of the pastimes. We may think they're stories. We may think they're exceptional compositions. But we won't actually allow Krishna to enter into our consciousness fully. Now, Prabhupada, in order to encourage the propagation of Krishna consciousness and to help us all understand just how powerful these books are, made very clear the point that actually, however one approaches the Supreme Lord, even if it is done without full understanding, that person still derives some benefit. But at a certain stage, we need to develop that full understanding. And we need to modify our lifestyle and our thinking to be able to absorb that higher understanding. So Prabhupada said also that when books are distributed and when people receive the books, some will view the Krishna book in different ways. Some will view it just as stories, nice stories. And that is okay at the initial stage. It is okay to be enchanted by the pastimes of Krishna because they are captivating. It is simply to bring us these stories and to encourage our meditation on the Supreme Lord that Srila Vyasadeva, under advice from Narad Muni, composed the Srimad Bhagavatam, which was exactly intended to give out the pastimes of the Lord, which were not done prior to that in the compositions of the Vedas, the Itihasas, the Puranas, to such a deep level. So, to understand the pastimes, to relish them, to enjoy them, is our goal. And it may start with simple appreciation of a nice story. But then as we go through, we understand the tattva of Krishna. We understand that janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tattvatah taktum deham punarjanma naiti mameti sorjana. That janma karma, the activities, the birth of Krishna, is divyam, is transcendental. And that one who knows this science can actually make progress and go back to Krishna. That has to be deeply understood before we can absorb ourselves in these higher pastimes. When Krishna appears, it is always a moment of great joy. We celebrate Janmashtami. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Ki. We celebrate Janmashtami. Today's the auspicious day of Christmas. Auspicious in the sense of what it stands for, which is potentially to welcome the Supreme Lord or his representative into the world. And so this idea of conducting festivities upon the birth or the appearance of the Lord or his great devotee is a very nice trait. It's a very nice quality. It is a shame, though, that this initial noble notion has been overridden by commercialism to the extent that the original message is completely lost. And this is also a danger in our own culture and our own practice. As we follow the different appearances of the Lord, yes, they are occasions for great celebration. And in Vedic culture, our celebrations are always linked to some divine event. That makes our lives transcendental and auspicious. If the celebrations we have are linked to the great appearance of an acharya, or the great pastimes of the Lord, then we actually immediately use the occasions for ourselves to be happy as occasions for us to meditate and glorify the Lord, meditate on and glorify the Lord. What happens sometimes, though, is that that celebration takes on its own existence. And then the actual celebration of festivals like Janmashtami, Ram Navami, Dashera, Diwali actually almost just turns into a ritual, something that we do. And then we formulate whole material systems of entertainment around these festivals. And at best, we may actually come to the temple even. And we'll do a little dan, we'll do a little worship, we'll do a little offering. And then that will be it till the next time, and we go home. This is good in the initial stage. Krishna appreciates whoever appears, whoever comes to him, in whichever of the categories. But it is not the highest. And it is not the way to experience the deepest realization. I know many people, myself included, we used to come when we were younger to the temple, participate in the festivals, without really knowing the in-depth message behind them. But somehow that attraction was generated. The attraction that comes from hearing the pastimes of the Lord even without full understanding. And then that attraction, when it is coupled with a program of actual clear study and advancement, study and practice, that leads to our growth, our spiritual growth. So then the ritual becomes a meaningful component of our deep spiritual growth. And that is what we are aspiring for. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is writing this book to please the devotees and to give us entrance into the pastimes of the Lord. He's not doing it for the sake of a little entertainment, for the sake of making his name in the Vedic canon. It is for the sake of giving us the tools and the ingredients for deeply understanding the Lord. To understand the Lord is a tough prospect. No one has an automatic right to understand the Lord. As the Lord explains in this verse that Prabhupada quoted, that fools deride me when I descend. And to these people, the Lord simply doesn't manifest. The Lord doesn't have as his mission statement that any person, however they behave, they will have the right to see me. The Lord never declares that. Rather, he declares that those who serve me with love, those who engage in devotional service, priti purvakam, those who engage in loving service to me, who render service to me as a friend, in friendship, with great faith, with great concern, with great intensity, these people get the keys to the kingdom of God. Now, we all like to get the keys to a big place, perhaps to a palace, to some large building, perhaps our new office. But the keys to the spiritual world are something a little more exciting. Because when we have the keys to the spiritual world, which of course, in one sense, our keys are our acharyas, our great acharyas whose dhotis we hold on to take us back. So when we go to the spiritual world, we get to enjoy with Krishna, because that's Krishna's world. So the spiritual world consists of pastimes with Krishna and the devotee, but pastimes where a certain intensity of mellow and a certain format of behavior is predominant. The format of behavior that takes place in this world is not suitable for our activities in the spiritual world. Rather, we have to be situated in a special realm of consciousness, where those things that we do offer pleasure to the Lord. Then it gets progressively more complex, because sometimes with certain characters in the spiritual world, their activities may seem to initially not give pleasure to the spiritual world. They will act perhaps to wind up a situation, to stir it up, to create difficulties. But ultimately, the net result is that Krishna and the devotees have a great, great pastime. So the aspect and this concept that the Supreme Lord has to take birth in our consciousness is very important. establishing Vasudev consciousness is something that Lord Shiva discusses in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Satvam Vishuttam Vasudeva Shabditam. Lord Shiva is constantly situated in a state of trance where his consciousness is pure spiritual consciousness, pure Vasudev consciousness. That consciousness in which Vasudev manifests, in which Krishna manifests. And it is always interesting to see how the different exalted devotees have had Krishna manifest to them. Once upon a time, and this story is described in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Narad Muni wanted to find out which devotee had received the most complete mercy of the Supreme Lord. And so Narad Muni speaks to different devotees. He wants to find out which devotee has received the highest, the most complete mercy of the Lord. So he visits different persons. He visits a brahmana. That brahmana explains, actually, I'm very, very fallen. Please go and see someone else. Then, I'm missing out a few steps here, but he encounters personalities like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Hanumanji. He encounters the Yadavas. He encounters Uddhava. He encounters the gopis of Vrindavan. And that pastime leads to a whole wonderful replica of Vrindavan being created in Dwarka. Now, during this entire pastime, Krishna visits each one of these personalities. And each one of these personalities, upon being glorified by Narad Muni turns up and he says to them, "You have received the supreme complete mercy of the Lord. I offer you my obeisances." They immediately close their ears. They close their ears and they don't want to hear anything. And they say, "What are you saying?" And then they proceed to describe a full list of their disqualifications. How Krishna ignored them. How they failed to serve Krishna when it was required. How they failed to conduct a service that Krishna needed. And as a result, it gave Krishna stress. They go through and they describe their disqualifications. And then they say to Narad Muni, "But actually, there is one person who has achieved the full mercy of the Supreme Lord." So Narad Muni, singing, merrily goes along to see the next person. The same situation repeats itself. Narad Muni offers his obeisances, glorifies the person. The person doesn't want to hear anything, and he forwards Narad Muni to another person. And so this cycle goes on. It goes throughout all these different people that I've mentioned, and through different places. And eventually winds up in Dwarka, where the real bhava and the essence of the gopis comes out. Now, each person in this relationship has had a different relationship and interaction with Krishna. The method that Lord, or the way that Lord Shiva interacts with Krishna is quite different to the pastimes that Lord Brahma has with Krishna. Quite different to the way that Hanuman serves his Lord Ramachandra. Quite different to the way Uddhava worships the Lord. Quite different to the relationship the Yadavas have with Krishna. And again, quite different to the relationship, the intense, simple love that the gopis have for Krishna. Each person has a completely different way to interact with the Lord. Each person's manifestation is different. And so in spiritual life, we learn to understand that the degree to which the Lord is impressed, or the degree to which the Lord appreciates our service, is not determined by the method in which that service manifests. Each person, being unique, has their own relationship with Krishna. Each person has their own service to offer to Krishna. And so Narad Muni, he wonders, he asks Krishna directly, "Who is it? Who is it that has actually achieved the highest mercy? I visited so many people. I can't understand their behavior. It's inconceivable to me. How is it that they think like this? I can see that they've all received so much mercy." And Krishna explains to him, "Yes, what you're saying is correct. It is inconceivable because the activities of my devotees are themselves very inconceivable. It is not possible for people to just understand them through external observation. We're going to observe the activities of Lord Chaitanya. So it's very important we don't observe them with external observation." So Krishna continues to Narad Muni. He says, each one of these persons that you have visited and that you have engaged in a great discussion with, each one of these has achieved my complete mercy. Whether they're in a situation of neutrality, in a situation of servitude, parental, whether it's sakya, friendship, whether it's conjugal, madhurya, each one of these persons, with their own unique services, has attained the most complete mercy of myself. And that has manifested in their unique ways. And so we do not need to try to mold ourselves to a particular method of expression of our devotional service. We have to be very careful that we don't just concoct methods of expression. That is the counterside to this. That we don't just whimsically decide how we serve the Lord. We don't just whimsically come up with some method that I think will please the Lord. This is a very dangerous step. This is a step towards sahajiism. This is a step towards actually disregarding the rules of the scriptures. Those persons, ye shastra vidim utsrija vartate kama karata na sasiddhim avapanoti na sukham na param gatim. Those who act whimsically disregarding the injunctions of shastra, neither sukham nor param gatim comes to them. Neither do they get happiness, neither do they get the ultimate path, the ultimate destination. So within the scope of shastra, there are methods of behavior that we need to learn, that we need to adopt. And within those methods of behavior, those qualities, those types of consciousness, there is a tremendous range of expression, a tremendous range of services that the Lord has made available. One day, as Krishna consciousness becomes relevant to every single person in this world, and book distribution clearly is one step in that process. It is a method for people to come into contact with the Shastra. And I believe yesterday was the last day officially of the marathon. So now the work begins. Maybe the last day of the marathon, but now the job begins. That all these people who have received something now need to be encouraged to progress in the spiritual path. Not that the Bhagavad Gita that they've received remains as it is on their bookshelf or in their cupboard forever. Now that Gita needs to become alive to them. And they need to engage in their spiritual life. So now actually that method, that service really takes off. And for some people, clearly preaching externally, preaching is always internal and external, but preaching specifically includes the external activity of making contact with people and giving them something. Sometimes we make the mistake of, in our enthusiasm to say everything is preaching, we actually miss the essence of preaching. Preaching naturally means the contact between one person and another where the discussion of Krishna consciousness takes place. Now, all services can be linked to preaching and they can all be counted as preaching, as long as they serve that ultimate goal of bringing another person to Krishna. So bringing another person to Krishna involves so many aspects. And a person's journey in the spiritual world depends on so many people, so many devotees. It won't be one person that's involved. It will be the person that made them first aware of Krishna consciousness. It will be another group of people who give them confidence that this way of life is actually possible. That's why a society of devotees is so important. They see devotees engaged in the activities of Krishna consciousness and they think, wow, this is actually possible. These devotees are having so much fun. I don't mind such a lifestyle. Then there is the philosophical aspect where they understand the basis for that lifestyle. They understand why it is that we carry out this lifestyle. And in this way, so many different persons are involved in a person's Krishna conscious journey. And that person advances, and they actually start to understand who the Supreme Lord is. And when they understand who the Supreme Lord is, they become increasingly qualified to enter into those pastimes. The result of entering deeply into these pastimes of Chaitanya Charitamrita, of the Bhagavatam, is that we understand who is this person, Krishna. What does he like? What does he not like? And then even in this world, we engage in activities which please Him. That is our qualification. When we engage in activities that please Him, we offer our abilities, our whatever we have to Krishna with love, with affection. That has transformed our consciousness to be fit for the spiritual world. So then that's quite a successful life. That life which has gone through this journey is successful. Because at the end of it, we're with Krishna. There is no more birth and death. There is enjoyment at every step. We are situated in a situation in which we are happy. So it is something that should always inspire us. The goal, the paramgati, should be our motivation and our goal in life. So I'll stop there.